Hey, everybody. Can you hear me? This is Eric Mann on Voices from the Front Lines. I'll be your host today. That was Bassa Perdue by Nicola Conte. And we have a good show today. Welcome to the 4 o'clock Voices from the Front Lines segment of the Public Affairs Hours of KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world, out there world, at www.kpfk.org. Again, my name is Eric Mann. I'll be your host today. Well, the show is going to have three parts. I'm going to do a film commentary on the film The Lives of Others about the East German secret police in the 1990s. Then, around 4:15, 4:18, we'll be joined by V.J. Prashad, the Associate Professor of International Studies at Trinity College, who's going to join us to discuss President Bush's recent visit to Latin America and the politics of Latin American insurgency. For our final segment, Jay Levin, the founder and former publisher of the LA Weekly, will join us in studio to discuss his new organization, the Real Talk Media Group, and its first publication, Real Talk LA Magazine, which a lot of you have been seeing on billboards. So we're not going to go to a break. I'm going to start with a very complex film review of The Lives of Others that is probably going to be more in book length, but I'll shorten it for you. Well, I was very, very deeply moved by a film, Das Leben der Anderen, The Lives of Others, which I think you know won the best foreign film in Oscar in the 2007 Oscars. This brilliant film shows the despicable system of spying that characterized the Stasi, the East German secret police, with its 100,000 Gestapo-like operatives and its 200,000 informants, each one compromised, bribed, or flattered into a life of betraying one's own co-workers, punishing one's own competitors, and advancing one's own careers. Slogans like, the Stasi must know everything, and the Stasi is the protector of the socialist experiment, make socialists like myself sick in watching it. The cross between Stalinism and Nazism, that was the unique evolution of the GDR. There was a lot of Stasi jokes. There was even a couple that were used in the film, because one of the things it showed is a country that was so cynical, so filled with informants, that the only thing people could do at times to resist was to make jokes. So one joke says that, and this I got from Inez Hedges, who's an author, in her article in Socialism and Democracy. Guy goes into a bar and he comes next to a Stasi operative who we assume everybody is, and the Stasi operative says to him, what do you think of President Honecker, who's the president of East Germany at the time? And the guy's dumbfounded, he doesn't know what to say. He says, well, I think of the president, what do you think of the president? The guy says, well, under those circumstances, you're under arrest. So there's no way to get around the police state. So the film, The Lives of Others, won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film. Its brilliant screenwriter and director, Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck. Its Best Actor Award in many film festivals went to Ulrich Muhi, who plays Gerhard Wiesel, the enigmatic and conflicted Stasi spy. He's caught in a vice between the ambitious Stasi supervisor, Lieutenant Anton Grubitz, played by Ulrich Tucher, and the conspiratorial GDR minister Bruno Hampf, played to disgusting perfection by Thomas Theme. The prey of all the spying revolves around the artists of East Berlin, both showpieces in their competition with the West, and yet suspected as vacillating allies, as best, by the party, and under constant surveillance, except those with the most impeccable credentials. And from the party's perspective of the state socialist dictatorship, no one has such credentials. The key protagonist of the artist class are the stunning, ambitious, and deeply conflicted actress Christina Maria Seeland, played by Martina Gedeck, and the handsome, charismatic playwright and her boyfriend, George Dreeman, played by Sebastian Koch, who tries to toe the party line, but is still not trusted by the party. So the first thing about the film is it just shows in incredibly painful detail what it's like to live in a world in which you're consistently spied upon. I would go more into the film and do a classic film review, except to say that it's one of the finest films I've ever seen, and my wife Leanne and I were on vacation, and it was so upsetting to me that it literally ruined my evening. As a socialist, as someone who has been and is friendly to the communist cause, it's just a moment of looking at your own things that you fought for in your life and literally feeling sick about. Now, I hope we can look at our own country and feel equally sick about what's going on here, which I'll get to. But on a longer note for another occasion, before we get to the two other transitions, when my wife Leanne and I were in Germany in 1991, including the eastern part of Germany, 2 years after the fall of the wall, and eastern Berlin, we saw a great play called Red Rosa. The conclusion was that after the fall of the Nazis, neither party, the West or the Soviet Union, had any interest in exploring the depth of capitalist Nazism or its deep, inextricable roots in virtually all of Germany, and that all of its opponents had been murdered. As such, that is to say, all of its opponents, meaning most of the communist resistance, most of the democratic resistance, had been murdered. As such, as the U.S. and Soviets worked to bribe, flatter, or kidnap Nazi scientists for their own nuclear program, neither West nor East Germany wanted to have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, let alone a war crimes trials that would have implicated tens of millions of Germans. As such, each side could create instant denazification. The United States wanted nuclear scientists like Wernher von Braun, who was instantly Christian, a Democrat, meaning an anti-communist. The communists needed a buffer against future German and European invasions. Thus, they formed the East German and Eastern Bloc nations into the Comintern. Many of those nations had legitimate anti-Nazi resistances, but Nazi Germany, when conquered, was a nation of Nazis, some going to swear allegiance to the new capitalist West, others to the new communist East, and many who joined the Stasi, the new East German secret police. They had Nazi backgrounds and many more Nazi sympathy. So, as a transition to the present, I would say that one of the things I got about the lives of others is that those of us who are socialists have to take a very hard look at what in the socialist past we both will take responsibility for, and what in the socialist past we want to retain, what in the socialist past we want to improve upon. But more importantly, how do we do that? So I look to you to a book called Has Socialism Failed by Joe Slovo. And what's important about that book is in that book, Joe Slovo, as a very hard-hitting communist, indicated how sick he was and said that the greatest defeat of the overthrow of the Eastern Bloc is it was overthrown by its own working class, not by the CIA primarily, but its own working class chose to reject socialism. And then he goes in, after having pretty well put you on the floor, as the lives of others does as well, and says, and yet, it is also the South African Communist Party leading the struggle against apartheid. It's also the communists who led the struggle against Nazism. And it's only socialism that really has a future in a world completely taken over by imperialist bestial capitalism. It's a very complex read, and I urge you, those of you who would go see the lives of others, to also read the book, Has Socialism Failed by Joe Slovo, which will indicate the punchline, it is not. Also, on March 29th, on a Thursday night, I believe that is, and we'll be having announcements at 7 o'clock at the Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, and you'll be getting information on this. Manuel Criollo and myself, who just came back from Venezuela, and Ava Golinger, the excellent author of the book The Chavez Code, will be speaking at 7 o'clock that night about the very exciting anti-imperialist and socialist experiment in Venezuela, led by both President Hugo Chavez and by a tremendous number of grassroots and left organizations. So socialism has many problems. Part of socialism is the lives of others, the Stasi and the secret police. But socialism is also the experiment going on in Venezuela today. But while the socialist experiment goes on, so does the capitalist experiment in a Nazification here at home. And I think it's just very important because when people see films like The Lives of Others and see the brutality and the insanity of what it's like to live in a police state, I get scared sometimes that when I'm in Santa Cruz, where Leanne and I saw it, a very nice, happy college town where you could go and have really nice wine tastings and cool things like that, you have an eerie sense that, boy, am I glad I live in the United States. At least I'm not being spied upon by the Nazis. well, my friends, by the Soviet secret police. Well, if we had more time, I will go into more detail, but as Cynthia McKinney said, I at least pointed to, as they say in court, three pieces of legislation passed not by the Stasi, not by the Nazis, by the United States Congress. The first is the secret evidence law. The secret evidence law refers to a portion of the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996. Wait a minute, it couldn't have been 1996. Bill Clinton was president. Oh, yeah, it was signed by Bill Clinton after both houses passed it with enthusiasm. And basically, in just one example, in regular removal proceedings where a government is attempting to prove deportability, this is already the rule. The Secret Evidence Repeal Act would expand this rule to all deportation cases, including those involving aliens accused of being terrorists, accused of, and to proceedings involving denial of bond, immigration benefits, and to certain persons seeking admission. So I turn you to the secret evidence law as one example of the growing police state. The second is the Military Tribunals Act of 2006. And again, our thanks to Dehan Song, our researcher on this, signed into law by President Bush in October 2006, makes any alien unlawful enemy combatant subject to military commission, which includes U.S. residents, that's you and me. Any unlawful combatant is defined as someone who has, quote, engaged in hostilities or has purposefully and materially supported hostilities against the United States or its co-belligerents who was not a lawful enemy combatant. So let me see if I understand this. If the United States invades Vietnam and I'm in the committee to support the National Liberation Front, am I a potential unlawful combatant? If the United States invades Iran, Iraq, if you support the Kurds, if you support the Chavistas, is it a simple thing that the United States can declare who's the enemy and then you become an enemy combatant? And then finally, under the Patriot Act, the act enhances the executive's ability to conduct surveillance and gather intelligence. It places an array of new tools at the disposal of the prosecution, including new crimes, enhances penalties, which means expands them, longer statutes of limitations, and grants the INS the authority to detain immigrants suspected of terrorism for lengthy, in some cases indefinite, periods of time. I could go into more. BJ's coming up soon. The Patriot Act creates a broad new crime of domestic terrorism, denies entry to non-citizens on the basis of their ideology. And then, of course, the sneak and peek searches, covert searches of a person's home or office that do not have to notify the person involved of the search warrant until after the search is carried out, access to records and international investigations, tracking internet usage. I think that the final thing I'd say about the police state in the United States is that it's thoroughly and completely in place, and the only thing really preventing its full implementation is the passivity of the U.S. left, the passivity of most of you listening to the show, your ability to be critics and not actors. And I think as we turn the corner and the critics become actors, the actors become revolutionaries, the revolutionaries actually build a movement, we will see that the police state described in the lives of others is actually the lives of ours as well. So with that, we're going to take a brief break, hear some music, relax a little bit, and Vijay Prashad will be right with us.